You're listening to 101.4 on FM Radio, live from Hammersmith. It's me, Rob Brennan, joined in the studio as ever by Brendan Horgan and David Brenchley. How you doing, lads?
Good to see you, Rob.
Good, thanks.
Going to start with a bit of sad news, actually, tonight. Its tributes have been paid to Irish Olympic boxer Darren Sutherland, who was found dead in his London flat. The 27-year-old, who won a bronze last year in Beijing, was discovered on Monday by his manager, Frank Maloney. A Metropolitan Police spokesman said the death in Bromley, South London, was not being treated as suspicious. Mr. Maloney was taken to hospital after finding the body, and it was later confirmed he had recently suffered a heart attack. Former world champion Barry McGuigan said, "It's an absolute tragedy. I would describe Darren as a phenomenal talent." He added, "I believe he would become a world champion in the professional ranks one day." Michael Carruth, who won welterweight gold for Ireland at the 1992 Olympics, said, "He had the power, he had the charisma, everything that makes going into making a top-class pro. He had the ingredients there."
Really, really sad news that this week, wasn't it, Rob?
I was completely shocked, Brendan. I heard it Monday morning, and I had to go online just to make sure. I thought I've heard the wrong name there. I watched him in the Olympics last year. He was always smiling. I found him always interesting because he was born in London, moved to Dublin, then he moved over to St. Vincent. So his accent was a very interesting accent, to say the least. So I've always found him very interesting just listening to him. So, he won that bronze medal. You know, the whole country's in shock. And I was in Ireland at the weekend and speaking to people back there, you know, nobody can quite believe that what's happened.
Yeah, it was yourself who actually told me on the morning, and I didn't believe you when you told me on the phone. But it's going to be a massive, massive loss to boxing. We had Frank Maloney on the phone a few weeks ago talking about Darren and his up-and-coming bout, and he was training. So it's just really, really sad news for an up-and-coming boxer. He was touted around as being the best of the bunch that came from the Beijing Olympics, and they had tipped him. He was tipped by many to become a future world champion, so whatever's gone on there is really sad.
Yeah, absolutely, and obviously our condolences to Darren's family, and hopefully Mr. Maloney can, you know, come back to good health. But we'll have to move on. What are we going with, boys? We're going with the Formula One scandal.
Dave, what's...
We are, yes. Crashgate, as they're calling it now, has sort of exploded. And now Renault's managing director, Flavio Briatore, and executive director of engineering, Pat Simmons, have sensationally quit the team. The news was announced as the team revealed that they would not be challenging recent allegations made against them that Nelson Piquet Jr. was ordered to crash his car at last year's Singapore Grand Prix. Despite Briatore's assertion of no wrongdoing, the swift departure of he and Simmons appears to point to their guilt. But today, Briatore has said that he willingly stepped down as Renault team boss in a bid to save the team from a harsh punishment at next week's World Motorsport Council hearing. Briatore and director of Pat Simmons left Renault amidst the allegations that they were the masterminds behind Piquet Jr.'s crash at last year's Singapore Grand Prix. As well, in Formula One, the historic name of Lotus will return to Formula One next season, but we'll have more of that later on the show, Rob.
Interesting stuff. What did you make of that, Brendan?
Well, it's shocking, but it is shocking. Well, let's see what kind of effect it has on your local football team, QPR.
That's all I'm interested in, quite frankly. I'm just, you know, I know a lot of fans are really waiting to see if he's going to be kicked out of the club after this, because obviously his partner is Bernie Eccleston.
So. Yeah, well, we'll touch on that a little later. Also, we've got the news today that Emmanuel Adebayor has been hit with a 3-match ban for stamping former Arsenal teammate Robin Van Persie. He was charged with violent conduct for an incident during the weekend's match at Eastland. He's got his 3-match ban, lads. We'll touch on that a bit later as well. We'll go to a quick music break, I think, now.
Yeah.
Hi, you're listening to 101.4 on FM Radio. It's Rob Brandon here. We obviously mentioned just before the break that we're going to be talking football. We're going into depth about Premier League action and Champions League action, and obviously a lot of things happening with Emmanuel Adebayor. We'll also be looking at Formula One in greater detail. We've got boxing to talk about, Mayweather v. Marquez, and of course the tennis US Open results. But first of all, a different form of football, Gaelic football, joined in the studio by Steve Martin. Steve, thanks very much for coming on the show.
Good to see you. Thanks.
Steve,
nice to be here.
Obviously our Irish listeners will be well aware that this Sunday at Croke Park, 3:30 kickoff, it's Cork v Kerry in the All-Ireland final. For people who aren't Irish, who haven't got a clue about Gaelic football, can you just give them a little bit of information about what this means in Ireland?
In terms of sporting, a sporting occasion, there's nothing bigger. If you can imagine the FA Cup final and the Grand National and Wimbledon all rolled into one, that's what it means to the Irish people this Sunday. Should say there was another game a couple of Sundays ago, Kilkenny and Tipperary in the hurling, which
was
a terrific, a real humdinger. You know, one of the greatest finals has been in years. I would like, family tradition has Cork hurling in their background, so I would like to have seen Tipperary win the game, but they can't win them all. And the Kilkenny team at the moment is terrific. It's as good as the Harlem Globetrotters were in basketball, as good as the Brazilian team of 1970. They're that good, you know. They're playing hurling like it's an art form, like it's a dream. As to the game this Sunday, if you're within a mile of Dublin, you'll be able to hear the roar. It's just that big.
80,000 people in that stadium on Sunday.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
Sorry, there. We've just had someone enter the studio.
We've been invaded.
Invaded, but not to worry.
Spectator on the pitch. It gets people that worked up, you know, that they forget where they're supposed to be, you know, and they're jumping out of their seats and they're invading the pitch before you know it.
But on that note, Steve, 80,000 supporters and they're mingled in together.
You're on any sort of trouble in terms of hooliganism or, you know, disruption or thuggery in that sense is just a no-no, not just on All-Ireland Sunday, but anywhere, you know, all over the country. Games are played year in, year out. People go to the pub together. Yeah. You wear your colours, up Kerry or up Cork or any of these things. And it's always been that way. In all of the years I've been going to Gaelic here, you might see a fight on the pitch, but you don't see a fight off the pitch, no.
You're talking colours there. I was in Ireland recently for a wedding, and people like to parade their flag of their county now. If you're in the All-Ireland final, you kind of find a flag from anywhere, don't you?
Anywhere. In fact, somebody came into the Irish Centre a couple of weeks ago just looking for a Tipperary. Where could he buy a Tipperary jersey? Because his mate had persuaded him that he must come and watch this game. This is an Englishman we're talking about now. And he wanted to see the hurling final. So he just walked into the Irish Centre. He said, where can I find a Tipperary jersey? Apparently you cannot go and watch the game without wearing a colours of some description. I'm not sure if he ever found one, but we tried to point him in the right direction. But that's absolutely true. If you were driving through a village anywhere in Cork or anywhere in Kerry this last couple of weeks, the flags are out. I mean, it's absolutely festooned with flags and colours, and the telegraph poles will be painted, the gates will be painted, the roofs will be painted, and I don't know, they'll even paint the sheep and the cows. You know, anything that can stand the colours, hang out your brightest colours. That's the motto, really.
Now, it's the Rebels of Cork vs the Kingdom of Kerry on Sunday.
Indeed.
And we're talking a sport here which, if you're not used to it and you watch it live, you'll probably think, what are they doing and how can they get away with basically being able to bang into each other?
Sure. I mean, it's for people who've never seen it, it's a mixture of soccer and rugby. I guess that's the best way of describing it. It's played with a round ball. The point system is that if you put it over the bar but between the uprights, you score a point. If you can bang it in the back of the net, which I hope the Cork boys will be doing this particular Sunday, you get 3 points. It's a mixture. But it has its own fluency, and when it's played well, particularly with hand passing now as well, because you can handle the ball also. It's terrific. There's a little bit of basketball in there as well, and indeed in recent years, I was talking to somebody about 4 or 5 years ago who runs a local Gaelic team, and he's got young black kids, you know, from a Caribbean background, who are getting into playing Gaelic. This is sort of down southeast London way,
yeah.
And they are bringing skills that they would use in basketball,
right,
to Gaelic, and finding, you know, that there's a crossover, and you can there's emergence there.
Well, I know the development officers in the London GAA are doing a lot of work in schools.
Yes.
Your own experience of playing Gaelic, have you played yourself?
Well, not for a good few years now. I think my experience of playing Gaelic perhaps would not be as rich as the guys who are playing it now. The facilities were quite rough. I mean, I would be going back about 20 years ago. And if you go back further, I can remember my grandfather, who came from what we would call the hurling part of Cork, you
right.
know, where hurling is really in the blood. When he first emigrated to London, he lived in West London, lived in Ealing, and the nearest he could get to a Gaelic game, to a hurling match, was to travel to Dagenham every Sunday.
Oh,
and he would do this, travel 20 miles across on the district line, 20 miles back, just to see a game of hurling. You know, it meant that much. And you could not get near the ground when people were there. You know, it was that well turned out and represented. The crowds want to see it that much. Nowadays, the facility is much better. I was at Ruislip GAA last Sunday, got a terrific clubhouse, great facilities, got the bar going, of course, but you can get food, you can get coffee, and it's just really great crack, let's put it that way. And it's great to see it.
Brilliant stuff. Steve, we're just going to go for a break. We'll come back, tune in. We're going to talk about places where you should maybe watch the game on Sunday.
We come on this loop, John B. My grandfather and me. Around Nassau town we did roam. Drinking all night. Got into a fight. Well, I feel so broken. I wanna go home. So hoist up the John B. sail.
You're listening to 101.4 on FM radio, joined in the studio by Steve Martin, talking Gaelic football. It's the All-Ireland final on Sunday between Cork and Kerry. And you were saying before the break that you've played a little bit yourself of Gaelic football, Steve. I guess what people might not realise is that this is actually an amateur sport.
Yeah, that's right.
This isn't. They're not getting paid wages like Ronaldo.
No, far from it. These guys work in banks. They work on building sites. They do regular jobs, and they have to do those jobs as well as train for the matches. It's interesting. To introduce a slight note of controversy here, there'll be 80,000 people in the ground in Croke Park on Sunday, paying whatever prices they're paying,
and
the players won't get a penny. None of that goes to the players. Maybe a little indirectly, but they're certainly not in the Ronaldo bracket or the Rooney bracket or any of that. No, nowhere near.
In terms of people watching this, the people that aren't in the stadium, they estimate the figures will be a lot bigger for an All-Ireland final than, say, for a big soccer match that Ireland are playing or a big rugby match. So it goes to show that maybe the people feel a little bit more because these guys are regular athletes in comparison to the footballers.
It's also true that if you take the Irish diaspora, in which is always expanding and going to different places and turning up in different places, there's something like 75 million people. So the All-Ireland final will be beamed to America. Watched in bars, Boston, Chicago, New York, San Francisco, Australia, Canada, places like this. They would be places that you might get an interest in soccer matches so much, but certainly the All Ireland games, the Gaelic games, and the connection with the old country, they'd be very big in those regions, those areas. So yeah, the audience would be huge.
And kickoff is 3:30. Game lasts 70 minutes. So if you're stumbling around London on Sunday, wondering what to do, where do you suggest people go and watch this?
I would think if you're within a stone's throw of an Irish pub or an Irish club or an Irish centre, such as the one in Hammersmith, you should put your head around the door and try and squeeze in. It will be on just about everywhere, and it is certainly on in the Hammersmith Irish Centre in Blacks Road.
And I've been obviously talking Kerry Cork. We all know Kerry Cork. Brendan here, our producer's dad's from Kerry. We've all got Irish backgrounds, but for someone who doesn't, can you just give a bit of background where Kerry and Cork are in Ireland and how good these teams are?
Kerry and Cork, neighbours, right down in the southwest corner. Two huge counties, two huge sporting traditions. It should be said that it's no exaggeration to talk about Kerry in terms of, say, Manchester United or the All Blacks, or Tiger Woods, or Federer, or something like that. They are the top team. They are the top competitors in the competition. And every year when the draw is coming around, you want to avoid Kerry as long as you can and hope that somebody beats them and knocks them out and you don't have to do it. Should be said, though, this particular year that Cork have beaten Kerry. They beat them in the Munster final, and no doubt they probably hoped that would be the last they had to see of them. They would certainly not be hoping that they'd bump into them again in Croke Park on this coming Sunday. But nevertheless, Cork, they've got no reason to fear them. Why should they? They beat them already. Kerry have not been on the top of their game this year.
I know Sligo actually came with
them. No, exactly. Yeah. Very, very close. And, a bounce of the ball in a different direction, and it could have been seen Kerry get knocked out. But
the worry is that they're going to crack the closer they get to Croker, though, is the worry.
Oh, it could be that. Certainly could be that. I mean, Croke Park is an intimidating venue for anybody. Yes, certainly. And Kerry just know their way around it. They know the bar staff. They know the doorman. They got they're on first name terms with the cleaning staff. I guess they are that familiar with it that they have nothing. They have no questions to answer in Croke Park. They've been there before. They know their way around it. Cork will be thinking, can we, on the big day, on the very big day, go up there and put it up to Kerry? And that's a big question, really.
I know there's a lot of places in London that kids can play these days. If you're thinking about sending your child to go and play, would you recommend it's a good thing for a child to get involved in terms of, it looks tough, but it seems to stand them in good stead. If you look at the number of footballers, for instance, who've been able to say, playing Gaelic football really helped me.
Sure. I mean, there have been some top-grade footballers over the years. Kevin Moran of Manchester United, Pat Jennings played it. These kind of guys, you know, yeah, top soccer players. And yeah, Gaelic games are tough. It's kind of in the Irish psyche a bit. Legend has it that Brian Boru was carrying a hurley stick at the Battle of Clontarf in 1019 or something like that. It goes back that far, but it's great way of keeping fit. Great way of you know, making mates, good exercise, all round healthy, and provided you don't get too drunk afterwards, it's, you know, it's an all round, it's to be recommended, I'd say. Yeah,
and it's for ladies too.
Yeah, it certainly is, and it was noticeable at Ryslip last weekend. They were showing the ladies' final, I guess in years ago. About 20 years ago when I was playing the game, we didn't see the ladies playing it so much, but they certainly are now, yeah.
Well, Sunday, 3:30, Cork v Kerry.
Yeah, thanks. I'm Cork.
Thanks very much for coming on the show, Steve.
Thank you, you're welcome.
Smith, and we're going to talk a bit of football. We're talking, as in Ireland they'd call it, soccer. So David, can you tell us how footy's been going of late?
I will. We obviously have results from the weekend, Saturday the 12th of September, and obviously there was a big match at Eastlands. I suppose it stole all the headlines. Manchester City beating Arsenal 4-2, a great game of football there. And obviously controversy through Emmanuel Adebayor. Chelsea went to Stoke and scraped a 2-1 victory. Stoke did take the lead, but as they tend to do now, Chelsea ground out the victory. Tottenham hosted Manchester United and lost 3-1. Again, Spurs took the lead. Jermaine Defoe, a great overhead kick. But United came back despite Paul Scholes sending off. And on the Sunday, Fulham beat Everton 2-1. Now, this weekend, we've got major London fixtures. Arsenal host Wigan Athletic on Saturday, and West Ham United host Liverpool in the 5:30 kickoff. On Sunday, some big games. We've got two derby matches up in Manchester. Old Trafford, Manchester United take on Manchester City. Fulham are away to Wolverhampton Wanderers. And again, a big London derby, Chelsea host Tottenham Hotspur. Now, in the Championship...
Real football. Real
course,
fans.
Of course. Queen's Park Rangers drew 1-1 with Peterborough United.
Yeah, still haven't won.
Yeah. And they will travel to Cardiff City.
Whoops, not going to win there either. Brentford, what about Brentford?
Brentford dropping down a division. Brentford drew 0-0 away to Huddersfield Town. Sounds like a very interesting game. And this weekend they will host Bristol Rovers.
Well, I think we'll have to discuss Mr. Adebayor's antics, especially with an Arsenal fan here. Brendan, what did you make of it? He was fired up, shall we say.
He was fired up. I'm going to be completely honest with you. If I was Adebayor, we're talking about the goal celebration now, I probably would have done the same thing.
You're getting a lot of stick.
I know it's your ex-team, but I personally, I would have done the same. I wouldn't have stamped on Robin Van Persie's head, is what I wouldn't have done.
Or Fabregas's ankle, or knee.
They were both red card offences. But you know the one thing, as an Arsenal fan, I know I'm biased, but the one thing, I watched the whole 90 minutes of that game, you know what wound me up more than anything else, is the fact that Adebayor proved in that Manchester City game that last year, he didn't care. He put no effort in last year whatsoever. And to watch his performance against Arsenal, right, let's take away the fouls, the stamping incident, and the crowd incitement incident. He put on one of the best performances that you will ever see from a striker. Well, that's one of the best performances I've ever seen him play. And it proves what an amazing talent he is. But as an Arsenal fan, it proved just how little effort he put in last year, and that he was. It's a fact. He was taking his paycheck, And he wasn't putting in the deserved effort. That's my opinion on it.
He's got a 3-game ban for the stamp on Van Persie's head, essentially.
Yeah, he's got a 3-match ban for violent conduct, which is for the stamp on the head.
No appeal. He hasn't appealed,
which is why it's been the automatic 3-match ban. But the hearing for the incitement incident with the fans is going to take place on the 30th of September, and it doesn't sound like they will appeal that. It does sound like they'll appeal it, because they haven't basically said, like they did with the violent conduct, that they're not going to appeal it. So it looks like they will appeal it, or won't appeal it. Get it right. But, you know, I think a three-match ban is enough. It's happened before with crowd incitement. I know with the West Ham-Millwall incident a few weeks back.
Yeah, not a great time to be inciting fans.
Exactly. I think David was at that match, the old Millwall game. What do you think of Adebayor's celebration? What do you think?
Personally, I mean, I think that if he'd have scored at the end where the Arsenal fans are, then, you know, I'd have let him off. You know, you can understand in the heat of the moment that he'd go over to the Arsenal fans. They're just there and celebrate. But I think running sort of 90 yards all the way down the other end of the pitch to do it, I thought it was quite ridiculous.
He's quick, isn't he? Kind of move fairly quickly.
You know what? That was one thing as well, which I had a good one during the week, that police were investigating Adebayor's celebration because they were investigating how he managed to stay on his feet while running for 90 yards.
But David, can you just give me your opinion on a lot of football fans? They feel, particularly in these harsh times, they're paying a lot of money to go watch these footballers, and they kind of feel, you know what? I can give you stick because you're getting paid loads of money. I'm not. Yeah. So I'm going to tell you exactly what I think of you, your mother, your wife. Where do you stand on being able to stand in a stand at a football ground and say whatever you like?
I think, yeah, I don't think you can say whatever you like. No way. I think there's boundaries. I mean, obviously you pay. It's so expensive to go and watch football. Even games like West Ham against Wigan at the weekend was probably 30 odd quid for a ticket, you know, plus travelling up there for West Ham. But, you know, there's things you can't do. You saw a lot with So Campbell and the Tottenham fans. You know, there are lines that you can cross.
I regularly see them lines crossed at football matches. Did you think that clubs, the FA, do enough to stop things happening at grounds? Homophobic abuse, general swearing with children around?
I don't think the swearing's too much, but yeah, like homophobic abuse and racist. You know, you see so many racist slurs and stuff, especially when England go away to foreign countries. And yeah, there's a lot more they could do, you know. More fine, you know, bigger fines.
There's a phone, a text line at Arsenal now. In the programme every week, there's a text number where if it's basically shopper, an abuser, anyone who you think is being overly abusive, homophobic, racist, there's a number you can text in. Text the number of the block and the row, and they'll actually eject these fans from the stadium. So that teams are actually trying to counteract it.
Well, we haven't seen the repercussions yet of this West Ham Millwall fight. But I tell you what, boys, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll discuss this Manchester derby. He's got a funny feeling there might be a few songs at that one. You're listening to 101.4 on FM Sport. Rob Brennan, Brendan Horgan and David Brenchley talking football at the moment. If you're not watching the Gaelic football on Sunday, there's a fair old chance you might be tuning into events at Old Trafford with Manchester United taking on Manchester City. Last season's title winners against the Manny Men from the other half of Manchester. Where do you see it going, boys? I mean, Man City got an awful lot of players injured. You're talking £100 million worth of striking talent injured, apart from Gray Bellamy.
Can you believe, after all the strikers they've bought this summer, that Adebayor gets banned and now they're rubbing their heads and scratching their heads going, we don't have enough strikers. It's going to be a really tight game, I think.
A lot in this one.
They're
going to
miss Adebayor. They really will. Before the Arsenal game, they'd only scored 3 goals and they all came from himself. I think Craig Bellamy, it looks like, will be thrown in that position. Am I right? Rabinho's gone.
Tevez's knee's
no,
dodgy.
Carlos Tevez.
Santa Cruz as well.
Roque Santa Cruz. So it's... Can you believe the money, as I said, just said, that they're struggling for a striker? United, on the other hand, had a good result in Europe last night or the night before, and they should be okay. It depends what kind of squad they put out. I think they will play. I have a funny feeling they'll play with Rooney, Berbatov and Michael Owen. I think they'll go with all three because the
really
I think so. With the way it worked in Europe the other night, they were Wayne Rooney was kind of cancelled out on his own up front and didn't really make an impact. They took him off, replaced him with Berbatov and Owen. They made a double substitution, but I've got a funny feeling they might go for the front three. They're going to need goals against Manchester City, and it is always an out-and-out game.
The only thing I'd probably put money on Sunday is that game will not end with 11-11, because what City have been doing, obviously, we're in London, but obviously half of London supports Manchester United and will probably be aware, although many have never ventured that direction, that City have kind of taken over the major Manchester City centre with poster campaigns and put up a poster of Tevez saying welcome to Manchester, having already played 2 seasons at United. So the fans obviously don't like each other to start with, but I think this Sunday on the pitch there's going to be an awful lot of late tackles going in. What do you reckon, Dave?
I think, yeah, they probably will. I mean, you know, if the atmosphere from the stands can sort of carry over to the players, then I'm sure that, you know, and Man City have a lot of players who are sort of homegrown, people like Richards, Michael Richards, Stephen Ireland, people like that, possibly Michael Johnson. So, you know, they'll get the tension in the stands, and, yeah, I'm sure that it will be a feisty affair. Obviously, Scholes has been sent off this season already, but I personally think they'll miss Adebayor so much.
So you're tipping United to win to break this unbeaten record of Man City's start to the season?
I think so, yeah. I think with Adebayor, I would have given Man City hope. I know it's one player, but again, you say they've got Bellamy up front, probably on his own. I can't see them getting something, but you never know.
They're not yet in the Champions League, Brendan. Arsenal are. Have you been enjoying the last week, having lost and then a strange performance in Belgium?
I was really disappointed with the performance against Standard Liège 3-2, Arsenal 1. But Arsenal were 2-0 down after 5 minutes. It was calamity. Eduardo sent a back heel in Arsenal's own area straight to a Liège player. Bang, back of the net. They got a penalty 2 minutes later. People would go on about the great comeback, that Arsenal were brilliant to come back and show great character to come back from 2-0 down to win 3-2, which I would agree with. It's a feat to do such a thing. But the performance was dreadful. I was angry watching that game, to be completely honest with you, because there seemed to be no passion, there seemed to be no leadership on the pitch. It seems the last couple of years, Arsenal do great until they lose a game. And then once they've lost the game, they seem to
collapse.
They don't know how to react to it. They wouldn't say sulk, but they don't seem to. There's no reaction from it. There's no fight. There's no grit and determination.
So if I put you on the spot and said, I mean, what are we, 6 weeks into the start of the season? Are you going to win anything this season, Bruno?
No, we're not going to win anything. If we get to a final, that would be great. If we finish in the top four, that would be great. But we're not going to win anything. The money wasn't invested. We got rid of 2 of our major players, didn't replace them. People have said Thomas Vermaelen's had a good start to the season replacing Kolo Touré. But he didn't look up to it last night. And it's in the big games when when you really see the full extent of how good these players are. And I don't think they're up to... I don't think they'll win a trophy, no.
So Arsenal got a 3-2 win. Everyone else was a bit more boring. We had the Chelsea down the road at the Bridge beating Porto 1-0. Manchester United went away to Turkey. Decent result against Besiktas, another 1-0. And, of course...
Liverpool place, was it Dreben? Dregen?
Hungarian is what I was calling the Hungarian.
First
lot.
Time they've ever been in the tournament, and by all accounts, I was watching the Arsenal game at the time, so I only got to see highlights. By all accounts, they gave a very good account of themselves, made it really tough for Liverpool. But, you know, at the end of the day, the four English teams have won their games.
It's not even interesting this stage of the tournament yet, because it's just a bit of a farce. It's all money. It's the next stage of the Champions League when I get interested.
It doesn't spice up until then, but I think that's for us as English, if you know what I mean. Like, we've got, you know, like Dave's a West Ham fan. I'm sure if West Ham, and I don't mean to be cheeky when I say this, but if West Ham were in the Champions League, every single one of those group stage matches would be like an FA Cup final for teams like Dreben, Standard Liège. This group stage is more for the smaller teams, even Glasgow Rangers to that extent, who have struggled in recent years in the Champions League. But it's just about being in Europe and taking place in that part. But I think as the English teams do take advantage of it, because they are pretty much guaranteed to go through to the knockout stages. So it's about the smaller team, that smaller challenge, you know. Your team's facing the likes of Real Madrid and Manchester United, and the odds of them winning are virtually nothing, but they're still there. They're still in the Champions League.
Well, of course, talking of small teams and Europe, I'm expecting, obviously, European football very soon at Loftus-Road, because we've got a five-year plan.
Isn't it a project?
Our project, I believe, and this is how it's basically gone recently, the wheels have come off, shall we say, and I'm reading the back page of The Sun. Briatore faces AXA QPR. Now, I haven't had time to read this. I know what's going on in Formula One, but can you just fill the listeners in about the fact that Briatore could actually be out of Loftus Road very soon?
Yeah, well, we'll get to Formula One after the break, but we'll link with this. Basically, Briatore, who is involved with the Renault Formula One team, is co-owner of QPR.
With
Bernie Eccleston, who's also the guru of Formula One. Basically, if he does get kicked out of Formula One, there's a rule in football, which is, what is it? It's something about the fair play basically person's credibility. I'm not sure the exact wording of it. But the fact is that if he is found guilty and kicked out of Formula One, it means that the FA may also have to kick him out. I've got it now, under the Football League's fit and proper person test.
So he has to go. If he's kicked out of Formula 1...
If he's kicked out of Formula 1, it means he will have been kicked out, and it's obviously for race fixing, which is a massive deal. If he's kicked out for race fixing, that would mean that he, in essence, has failed the fit and proper test. So the Premier League, which they've introduced, every owner of a club has to pass this test. In essence, they don't want illegal or dodgy characters, you know, taking over football clubs. You know, we had the Takshin Shinawatra thing at Manchester City before the Arabs came in. And that was extremely controversial. They don't want a repeat of that. So he may be kicked out of QPR. Your beloved QPR.
I'd be delighted.
Honestly.
When he came... We all expected millions of pounds to be splashed on the squad. We're still rubbish. We haven't won a home game. We've won one game all season at Scunthorpe. People aren't happy. People are staying away. And you can tell they're staying away because on Tuesday the game got rained off. They were going to let under-16s in for free. Now, I haven't heard of that for a long time at Loftus Road, letting people in for free under the age of 16. Under-5s, yeah. But under-16s a big old age group, you know. So... I can't wait, quite frankly, because basically, the dream is that Flavio saved the club. But I believe the club would have been saved anyway.
Do you not think, like, maybe this could be the case? Do you not think if he has been kicked out, if he doesn't get kicked out of Formula One, there may be the chance where he may now actually spend more time at QPR?
But that's the worry, that he'll spend more time, because he was picking the team last year, apparently. So if he comes back and he's only got one thing to focus on, we really are in trouble.
But maybe then he might go into his pocket then. He doesn't have the millions to spend on his Formula One team. He might actually spend it on a few players for yourself.
I think he's a very, very clever businessman. I think he likes the idea of the fact he owns a football club in West London. He entertains his guests. I see him there most weekends. And he enjoys that side of football. But I don't know. I think we can get rid of the boutique if Flavio goes.
Well,
Watch this space.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit more about Flavio and the Renault scandal after this quick music break.
Saying in her sleep, brother's got a date to keep, you can't hang around. Our house, it has a crowd. There's always something happening, and it's usually quite loud. Our mum, she's so house proud. Nothing ever slows her down, and a mess is not allowed. Our house, in the middle of our street. Our house, in the middle of our street. Our house, in the middle of our street.
Someone tells you that you've got to move.
In the middle of our street. Father gets up late for work. Mother has to iron his shirt. Then she sends the kids to school. Sees them off with a small kiss. She's the one they're going to miss in lots of ways.
Is the On FM Sports Show.
101.4 On FM Radio. Formula One, we're talking Flavio Briatore, we're talking about his involvement in Queen's Park Rangers, but we're going to basically have a bit of a discussion about what's happened. He's been involved, basically, in instigating one of his drivers last season at a Singapore Grand Prix crashing on purpose so the other driver could win. Now, it looked a bit dodgy at the time because you don't tend to come into the pits to change your tyres after like the fifth lap of a race, which happened. Alonso came in, and then all of a sudden, the other one went off the track, which, when you think about it, and reading a few opinion pieces today, very dangerous at that speed to decide, I'm just going to crash. And they basically found out that they'd done tests on the car, he made no indication of trying to slow down the vehicle, which, if you were going into a wall, you just would, unless you were told to. And it turns out, having been sacked 3 weeks ago, he was sacked by Renault and Flavio Briatore. Nelson Piquet came out, went to the IFA and said, do you know what? I was told to crash that day. That was completely rigged. So where do you stand on it, boys? Was Flavio doing good by his team, or is he just corrupting the sport?
I don't think it's good by. I mean, what was it? Just for a race win, a couple of points more in the Constructors' Championship. And like you say, you know, I was reading Simon Barnes in the Times. You know, it's so dangerous. You're putting PK's life at risk and then possibly all the other drivers' lives at risk. like you say, just for a couple of championship points. And I feel a bit sorry for Piquet because, I mean, he's had a shocker for Renault, really. He hasn't driven well. And this was supposed to be his chance to save his job. You know, if he'd have done this, he'd have been sacked. Although, you know, they're saying, I think Andrew Simmons said that it was Piquet. Pat Simmons said it was Piquet's idea. He came to them and sort of suggested
that. Sounds controversial to me because, as you know, each championship point in the Formula One Constructors' Championship is worth millions of pounds. And as you said, that's what I think it comes down to. A couple of points, a little bit extra money. But the thing I find most disgraceful about this is if Piquet hadn't have been fired from the Renault team, no one would know the difference. And I think, you know, could it have been a betting scandal?
I think the sport's in trouble. You know, what else has happened this year?
We've had the Max Mosley incident.
We've had that. We're going to have teams we're going to pull out and create a new championship. Now you've got this coming. I mean, it will turn in terms of what it's like athletics. People look at athletics and think they're all on drugs. Everyone's going to start watching Formula 1 and go, now what's going on now?
But to be fair, this is one thing I will say. To be fair, even though this has kind of overshadowed Formula 1 the last few months, this year has been one of the best Formula 1 championships in years. It's one of the most open championships. A lot of people were put off by Formula 1 by the fact that, let's be fair, Michael Schumacher won it how many years in a row? And you tuned into Formula 1 just, right, Schumacher's won it.
Who's coming second?
Who's coming second? Who's coming third? Now, you read it from week to week. I mean,
so what's going on at the moment? Does anyone know what's going on at the moment, Dave? What can you tell me?
What do you mean, what's going on?
Who won the last race?
Braun, GP, back to form. Rubens Barrichello and Jenson Button gave them a 1-2. So, you know, great.
He needed that button, didn't he?
He did, yeah. I mean, it still means that Barrichello cuts his lead by a couple of points. But, yeah, and he was helped by the fact that Sebastian Vettel could only pick up 1 point.
How's Lewis doing?
Not too well. I mean, he's still languishing. He failed to pick up a point this weekend.
Yeah, he was last. He was third coming into the last lap and crashed on the last lap. Lewis puts 100% into absolutely everything, and I think it came down to he was pushing that car, going for the speed too much. He lost control and crashed the car, but he was doing brilliant up until that point. The Force Indias have made a real impact recently, haven't they?
Yeah, and especially with obviously Giancarlo Fisichella's changed. Moved to Ferrari, and they've brought in Vittorio Antonio Liuzzi, who had a great weekend, really. He qualified really well, 7th, I think he did. And again, challenging for points when his car failed on him. And Sutil, 4th position as well. So, I mean, Force India are coming on so fast. And
good to see some new names in there.
Yeah, definitely. And I think they'll push on next year as well.
And Lotus back in next year, so... It's all happening in Formula One, but we're going to go for a break and then come back to talk about a little bit of boxing.
Another turning point, a fork stuck in the road. Time grabs you by the wrist, directs you where to go. So make the best of this test and don't ask why. It's not a question but a lesson learned in time. It's something unpredictable, but in the end is right. I hope you had the time of your life. So take the photographs and still frames in your mind, hanging on a shelf in good health and good time. Tattoos and memories and dead skin on trial. For what it's worth, it was worth all the...
Welcome back to the Sports Show on 101.4 on FM. We have to rush through this. We're running out of time. So much news this week. Major boxing fight this weekend. Floyd Mayweather Jr., the guy who beat Ricky Hatton, for the first time, former undisputed pound-for-pound king, is making his return to the ring on Saturday night against Mexico's Juan Manuel Marquez. It's going to be a huge fight to determine who is, in essence, the number two fighter in the world. The winner of this fight is due to fight the winner of Manny Pacquiao and Miguel Cotto, which takes place in October. But we all know Floyd Mayweather from his fight with Ricky Hatton. He is the number one. He's an amazing force. So definitely check out that fight. It's going to be on early hours of Sunday morning English time, Saturday American time. So it'll be on around probably 3-4 o'clock in the morning on Sunday. So stay up for that. But there's your boxing news, Rob.
Well, guys, end of another show. Thanks so much for joining me. I've been Rob Brennan.
Brendan Horgan.
And David Brenchley.
All right, see you next week.